23rd Annual Conference.
No, I know. I said I know you people are hungry. You're hungry for some real radio, aren't you? You've had enough of the same boring, repetitious sounds that commercial radio's been feeding you for years, right? Well, now is the time. Now is the time to act. Tune in to WHFR 89.3 FM every
Friday
night from
8 until midnight,
where you'll hear the
Equinox program and Scrockin' Your Batow during the Outer Limits.
And get just what you need, and you'll never, ever have to fall back on commercial radio ever again!
Attention HFCC students and guests, the Skylight Cafe is your on-campus solution for a delicious and affordable meal. The Skylight Cafe offers several lunch and dinner options, including vegetarian and halal choices. The Skylight Cafe is located in the Student Center building on HFCC's main campus and is open for your convenience from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Thursday and 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Friday. When you're on campus, be sure to check out the Skylight Cafe.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the employment outlook for medical insurance specialists is expected to grow above average clear through the year 2014. Henry Ford Community College is prepared to train you in the exciting and lucrative field of healthcare as a medical insurance specialist. For more information, give us a call at 800-585-HFCC.
Think you have what it takes? We do. Henry Ford Community College. Visit us online at hfcc.edu.
This is WHFR, Dearborn.
Welcome to the Heights News and Views, a talk show program part of the WHFR Tuesday Forum series of talk show programs presented from 1 to 2 p.m. The Heights News and Views is a program presented live on the fifth Tuesday of any month. The program is devoted to interviews with prominent individuals on issues important to the residents of Dearborn Heights. You are listening to WHFR 89.3 FM Dearborn, making waves from the campus of the Henry Ford Community College located in Dearborn, Michigan. You can hear all of our archived forum programs on the internet by going to our website at whfr.fm. Select the option Forum. Wait for the option to select that Tuesday date for the program that you wish to hear by selecting the desired date. Now, to your host and director, Ned Apigian, for today's program.
Well, here we are live today with our guest. Our guest today is none other than, it's the 9th District, right, Diane?
Correct.
Diane Webb, who is the County Commissioner of the 9th District, which includes all of Dearborn Heights, Garden City, and Redford Township. The easiest way to begin is to have Diane tell us something about herself, since I really don't have her biography. We don't need to know when she was born, but Diane, the mic's all yours. Tell us a little bit something about your background.
Well, I was born and raised in Garden City, lived in the area my entire life. I'm a product of Eastern Michigan University, where I did my undergrad in community relations, public relations, went to Wayne State for my grad degree in public relations, and I worked with the Bell Operating Network, the Bell System, for 18 years, with my last position being in Director of Community and Government Relations in Northwestern Wayne County, South Oakland County, where my interest in government began.
Well, I hope your pension is vested with 18 years. And it didn't take 20. Anyway, that gives you a little bit about Diane. She's an energetic young lady. And I mean young because I got a daughter her age.
You do. Thank you.
I guess the first question that you can expound on is essentially, what does a county commissioner do? I'm sure most of our listeners have absolutely no idea. And I know I'm going to learn something by listening to you. Go ahead.
That really is a good place to start, Ned, because the county commission is probably one of the less visible levels of government. I think people are more familiar with their local governments and state and federal governments than they are with the county. The Wayne County Commission is basically the legislative body of Wayne County government, and our key responsibilities are budgetary and legislative oversight. We create ordinances where they're necessary, write resolutions where they're necessary, and we approve and oversee the budget and the contracts that come under the domain of the budget.
Would you say it's like the city of Dearborn or Dearborn Heights, where we have strong mayor, weak council, or is it something like that or slightly better?
Well, according to the charter, it's an equal division of power between the executive and legislative branches. But when it comes to day-to-day operations, those are truly under the purview of the executive branch of government. We only get involved when it comes to approving contracts, for the most part, and as to who will do the work or provide the services to our residents.
I see. The idea of being from one community or another, the county commissioners from, let's say, another city, their view, is it much different than yours about what they have to do?
Well, you know,
Or do different commissioners who come from different parts of the county are more concerned about certain things more so than others, the more populated cities?
I think that's a fair question, because there are different priorities based on the constituents that you represent. You know, we have 15 districts. There's 43 cities, townships, and villages that make up Wayne County.
Oh, that's a great number.
We're divided into 15 districts, so there's a commissioner representing each district. And the districts are different, it's much like the state legislature, different in their makeup. Out county, if you go far out county, Sumter, Van Buren.
They're rural.
And then you have inner city. And then you have urban ring. I'm considered an urban ring out county commissioner because my three communities border the city. They're older communities, more established communities. So we don't have...
bedroom communities, essentially.
Yeah, truly. And so we do have different issues, different populations, different priorities. You will see sometimes issues divide out county from inner city. We try to work together, but then again, we represent the best interests of our constituents, and each community has its own culture and its own nuances and its own priorities.
So. In fact, there are 14 Democrats and one Republican, which is a little unusual.
Well, that is true. At the one and only Republican at this time being Laura Cox, that represents Northville Township, Northeast Livonia.
I see.
Plymouth Township.
Do you know how that might compare with Oakland County? You have any idea? Is it more evenly split or just the reverse?
Well, Oakland County always had historically had a majority of Republican commissioners. They, I think, have 27 commissioners, and they're not a chartered county, and they're much smaller in population. So there's a lot of differences between Wayne and
Oakland.
What does
that mean, not a charter county? That's interesting.
Well, we're a chartered county, and actually Macomb County is becoming a chartered county, where we actually filed the charter, and we follow the state constitution, and we're tied to the state constitution in a lot of ways. So we have a county executive, and the everything is delineated in our charter. So, in order to change the charter, we have to have a vote of the people, much like the city of Dearborn Heights.
Right.
So it just sets more, I think, lines in the sand, if you will.
So if you're not a chartered, which means you make your rules as you go along?
Well, I think they have more flexibility.
I see. So the nature of Oakland County, what would you say it was? It's 50% Democrat, 50% Republican?
Well, in recent years, it has been sliding to becoming more and more Democratic.
Right.
And at one time, I think they were only a seat or two from the majority.
I think most people don't realize that Oakland County has changed considerably in the last 25 years.
You're right, and it certainly has become more Democratic. In Wayne County, actually, we're going to gain a Republican seat in the new redistricting because of the way they put Canton in with Plymouth and Plymouth Township, which is majority of Plymouth and Plymouth Township are Republican. Mm-hmm. Canton's about a 50-50 split. So if you put Canton in with Plymouth and Plymouth Township, Republicans will gain a seat.
You're going to have 13 and 2 or something like that.
Not that it'll make a whole bunch of difference, but yeah.
Right. Could you tell us something about the census, what happened in Wayne County? I understand in Dearborn Heights, we were concerned that we were going to lose a lot. I think we lost 500 families or some number like that. That's all.
And yeah, actually...
what happened in Wayne County?
Wayne County, across the board, went from about... just north of 2 million people in the 2000 census to about 1.8 million in the 2010 census. So, but 250,000 of the estimated 300 to 350,000 lost were from the city of Detroit. So we saw a huge population decline in the city of Detroit. That will actually cause a consolidation of districts in the city. The city of Detroit will actually lose a seat on the county commission because one district lost 39% of the population.
Where do they figure the people went? To the surrounding outlying communities that fringe Detroit?
That fringe Wayne County.
That fringe Wayne County.
Yeah, Brownstown, Van Buren. Actually, Northville Township, Plymouth Township gained some population. The only older urban ring community that actually gained population was the city of Dearborn.
Jay, did you know that?
Yeah,
we had a very marginal loss in Dearborn Heights. I think Dearborn Heights held their own as far as urban ring communities go. They probably did the best in maintaining their
population. We thought we were at 58,000, and we thought we might be down to 53. And I think, that was with the fear, but the news turned out to be good.
Good news.
The question is... vacancies and foreclosures. Do you know, do you have any figures on that for the county? People are always interested in that number.
Right, and I will actually be covering that in great detail in my upcoming newsletter that will go out to all the residents in the district. But,
so that's great. You can tell us something about that.
Yeah, the Wayne County has a mortgage foreclosure prevention program, and we have a huge foreclosure issue.
Prevention? How do you prevent mortgage foreclosures?
Well, there are a lot of ways. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of ways. I mean, first thing they're going to try, it depends on the situation of the homeowner. I mean, if they're in a position where they've just had a temporary setback and got themselves into a position where foreclosure started, but have since gained employment or have access to cash to pay if the loan was modified, we'll try to modify their loan and lower their payment. If sometimes a dignified exit is what they're looking for, they know that they're not going to be able to make even a modified lower payment, and really want to walk away from the house without ruining their credit. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways to go about
that. Isn't that something you have to do with the lending institutions more so than the individuals?
Well, the lending institutions are, at the end of the day, the decision makers, but Wayne County will intervene. The Mortgage Foreclosure Prevention Program has representatives that work with thousands of different lenders, and they work with the individuals to try to help them mediate this process, because when people try to go this process alone, they have a very difficult time working with the banks. And so we have relationships with the banks.
So we have some interesting news for any listener in Wayne County. Is there a telephone number or something people that now realize there's some form of help that they can call for mortgage assistance and modification?
I would have known you were going to ask that question so I could have the phone number readily. I
hadn't thought about it.
But I do have the internet.
I told you I do this thing off the top of my head.
Right. So I didn't have preparation for that. But I know that online they can go to www.fightforeclosure.com. fightforeclosure.com.
Well, that's easy enough.
Yeah, fightforeclosure.com, or they could go to the Wayne County website, and there's also a link. And then they can apply right online in the comfort of their home rather than having to go downtown.
Well, that's important news for our listeners, whether you're from Dearborn Heights or Garden City or Brownstown Township.
Mm-hmm.
So our population, could you tell the people what that means to us in terms of the county gets state shared revenues like the cities do?
Oh, well, you know, it's just
or
like,
no.
Well, to some degree, I mean, reduction in state and federal funding. You know, a lot of what the county does is funded through the state and federal. We're kind of a flow through where we deliver services with state and federal funding. We have of our
what percentage would you? I was under the assumption the state dealt with cities in terms of distributing any of that.
Oh, they do. They do with revenue sharing in particular. They do.
Right.
But in the county has its own allotment for revenue sharing, which has also been reduced with the
from
less
the
population.
From the state.
Yes.
Which is indirect from the federal government.
Correct.
This is what a lot of people don't understand, how much of their federal income tax ends up coming back in one form, shape, or another.
Well, a lot of the programs that we do that involve federal funding have to do with Medicaid, for example, for mental health, because we have a whole mental health agency. The developmentally disabled, a lot of that is funded through Medicaid, which is federal dollars. Then we also have federal and state programs that offer incentives on economic development, roads.
Well, I would think the roads, the gas tax somehow has to come back through the county.
Yeah, the Public Act 51 monies, which is gas tax monies, are...
Yeah, why don't you explain... Lay, we're going to take a little break now to let the listeners know what's going on. Public Act 51, that's a good way to start off with. Well, listeners, we are listening to the Heights News and Views, part of the Tuesday talk show format, presented on the fifth Tuesday in any month. We are making waves here at WHFR 89.3 FM radio from the Henry Ford Community College. And I am your host, Ned Apigian, and our guest today is Diane Webb, Wayne County Commissioner representing the 9th District, encompassing all of the cities of Dearborn Heights, Brentford Township, and Garden City. And now back to our charming host, Diane Webb, and she might begin by explaining Public Act 51.
Well, Public Act 51 is the legislation behind the collection of gas taxes that are returned to the communities based on population. And those
gas taxes only?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so those monies, and then all of those monies, and this is quite an important issue because actually it's just been covered by what is eligible to spend Public Act 51 monies on. It's just been a question with Channel 7 as it approached the county and the county executive.
That sounds like a good question. If you could use it for everything, what's it have to do with gas?
Well, I guess they feel that people who buy gas are traveling the roads, and so that's... that would be the money is the most appropriate to use to fund road maintenance.
Right. For that, I can understand. Beyond that.
And that's all. Well, there's a 10% oversight. They are allowed 10% administrative. So
10%. That means you could get into that 10%.
Yeah. Well, you have to, because you have to hire people that run road crews. Not everybody in the roads department fills potholes. You know, there's management and executive functions, clerical functions. So the 10% is there to cover those people that are appointed to positions in administration of DPS.
Just the kind of people, unfortunately, we're laying off and doing away with because we need to keep the guys working. Unfortunate.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. Those are the times we're in.
Okay, so that's Public Act 51. If you hear about it or see it in the press or news talk about it, we know it has something to do with the gas tax, and that's only a state function, right? We don't get money through the federal government piped in through the state back to the communities.
There are federal monies that do come for roads, but not through Public Act 51.
I see. How do those funds come to us?
They have different names, different programs that the federal government starts, like with under the Obama administration, he had a lot of, you've heard a lot of talk about infrastructure, mostly crumbling bridges, which are a real big problem in an old city like Detroit. And so we'll get special funding, and sometimes they're called tiger grants from the federal government that are pointed specifically at rebuilding bridges or maintenance of certain highways. And
so a lot of stimulus money came to the county.
Yes, we did get a fair amount. I don't know the exact number.
What was the reason everybody's complaining none of this stuff was shovel ready? I thought almost everything was, if there's a need, it's not shovel ready because the bridge hasn't been redesigned or the road planned and designed. But
you know,
they complained that enough things were not done shovel ready. It's a mystery to me.
Well, I think I think that Wayne County's actually done an outstanding job at grabbing the dollars and moving with them. Unfortunately, the way the government, federal government especially, funding processes are, is that you won't know that a grant is coming. You'll have no preparation for it, and then all of a sudden, you know, you get news of it, and you got 30 days to allocate it. And so then everybody's found hustling. And my big problem with that is if we know that we have these issues, we've watched these roads crumble over the last how many, 30, 40 years, whatever. We've watched these roads. We know we have aging infrastructure. Detroit's old, these urban ring communities are long established. And so we've seen the problem for many years, yet there's no long-term planning. There's no, we have a master plan, of course, in our roads. We have a federal aid list. Every city's DPS or director or engineer in Wayne County sits on a federal aid committee. These people are experts in the field, civil engineering and roads and development, and they come forward to represent their communities on this board that's chaired by the head engineer of roads for Wayne County, Ken Cusell. And they meet monthly and they talk about prioritizing roads to be done with Public Act 51 monies. But with the federal monies,
these are county roads or state roads, but not city roads.
Right. These are, county roads that exist in different cities.
Right. So, like Michigan Avenue or Gratiot, or they would be county jurisdiction.
Beach Daily. I mean, you know, Middlebelt, Inkster, those are all county roads.
Now, Ford Road is a state road. No.
And what that's an MDOT.
Yeah, what are the other major state roads people can identify?
Plymouth, Southfield.
Well, the expressways for sure would be federal.
Well, only the federal.
I mean,
if they cross state lines, like 75, for example, is a federal. If they don't cross state lines, they're state.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. Don't they all cross state lines?
No.
There could be a couple. Let's see. 275 wouldn't. It's all in Michigan.
Right. But 75 does.
Yes.
So there's a good example of one of each. But what my issue is with the federal is that though they know we've had these problems for a long time, and of course we have a wish list in the federal aid list of and prioritizing them based on, you know, their the safety issues, the conditions of the road, how heavily the traffic is on those roads, if they're main thoroughfares or not, etc. And some of those decisions are what puzzle people. I also always get questions from people saying, why did you do Middlebelt when Warren is so bad? and you know, for the common sense person, that makes complete sense. But there's
perfect sense.
You know, I understand their question. I've questioned it myself, and the answer that you'll get from that is, who is the funding source? What are the needs of the road? What are the needs of the community with that road? What are the safety issues involved? How heavily is the traffic on that road? Is it a main thoroughfare through Detroit or to the airport? Or so they look at, are there hospitals along the way? So there are a whole lot of factors that the average everyday person really wouldn't think about. All they think about is, this road's got way more bumps than that road. Why are you doing that road first? So those roads are prioritized in that federal aid committee, and they do a really good job of having them ready and getting them done, I think. But when it comes to having federal dollars to do projects, there's no vision and planning. It's like, here is a huge grant. You have 30 days to spend it.
Well,
you know, so everybody's running.
Planning is an anathema in the United States in general.
I agree, especially on the federal level.
It has connotations of socialism, which is really a bad word in America. So, I have a question about that. How do you, what was the concern? Where did the money come from to do Outer Drive from Ford Road to Ann Arbor Trail, that little bit of stretch that was redone again? You're familiar with that. I remember you talked about where would that fall under?
Well, I tell you.
Because that road was designed strangely. It has an asphalt base and a concrete pavement on top of it. And when that thing fell apart, I thought maybe that had something to do with it. But where did the allocation come for such a small, virtually less than a mile, I would say?
Yeah, it was still like a $1.7 million project. The majority of the money, I think the majority of the money came from, actually it was federal, county, and city. The city did 10% of that. The county did the majority of it, and there was a small portion that was federal monies. But that was a whole unique situation, Outer Drive. Outer Drive is about one of seven, I think, roads in Wayne County that used two experimental processes at the same
right,
time.
Right, and that's when I brought that up. I thought maybe that had something to do with it.
And it's important, really important for people to know, and I've even done a couple of press releases on this because it's so important for people to know, because I've had questions from people who live in the area that said, you know, this road had a life expectancy of 20 years and it crumbled in five, and it looks like they're doing the same thing again. But
so there was something else wrong with it.
Yes. The experiment, the overlaying of the concrete over the blacktop that you talked about before wasn't the problem. And they redid do the same thing.
Yeah.
The problem was the mixture of concrete that they used.
So the admixture wasn't right.
It was, at that time when we did Outer Drive, it was an EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, law that was out there that didn't allow concrete manufacturers to let emissions go from the process into the air. They had to make new equipment that would actually pump this emissions back into the concrete mixture. What that did was degrade the integrity of the concrete.
I see.
So if you drove Outer Drive like I did many times.
So we
many
learned
times,
a very interesting thing about that process, right, Jay? That was extremely interesting.
And costly. And it was costly. It was a bad experience. They call it white topping, is the name for the mixture that they used at the time. And they did some of Haggerty out there in Canton with it.
So
as
what
well.
Do they do now? Let the
EPA lifted the standard.
I see. So that should make a difference. That's great.
That won't happen again.
Yeah, I'm going to, before we take another break at 1:30 on the hour, we'll be halfway through our program. What's the relationship of the county executive to the chairman of the county commissioner? Does the county commissioner get paid a little bit more, or does he have a little bit more power than the average commissioner? How does that work?
Well, he has a lot more responsibility, and he does.
What does he do? Does he coordinate something differently?
Well, all contracts that come through the county to the county commission come through him, and so he has many hats to wear in the process. You know, he's basically.
Just so our listeners understand, Gary Warrenchuk is the person we're talking about here.
Dearborn resident,
and he was appointed or elected by you folks to this position. So it wasn't like the president pro temp in a city council, which would be the highest vote getter.
Right. He was selected by the commission to be our chair.
So he was the only one that volunteered to get all this extra work? Or
no, he wasn't.
No, it was a competition.
There were several people that were interested in the position. And, of course, they make sure that they...
And the job probably pays a couple thousand dollars more a year.
It does. It's a full-time... Well, every county commission job is a full-time job, but most county commissioners have the autonomy to spend it all in the office or out in the field with
right,
their
they
constituents.
Have all, yeah, that's a thing we didn't talk about. That's a good thing to bring out. I remember there were county commissioners, there were attorneys that had all law offices and functioned in. It's a full-time job or a part-time job, depending on how you want to handle it.
I agree. I do it full time, and it's an 80-hour week.
I mean, it pays a
full time.
Yeah, it pays a full time wage. And did you guys all take a reduction recently, like the state reps did?
We took a couple. Actually, we took a 10% pay cut in my first term in office, and we did that We elected to do that. We were asking the unions to take a 10% pay cut. You know, we find ourselves in deficit every year just because of the economy, the growing costs of business, doing business, and the falling tax revenues and the cuts to revenue sharing. Yeah. It put us in a deficit situation every year. So we... So yeah. In order to...
Well, that's what's going to happen in Dearborn Heights. I think all the elected officials, because we've asked for a millage, mm-hmm. are going to take a 10% cut in pay. And for the council persons, it's more symbolic than serious, because we don't make that much money.
To begin with, right.
The mayor makes, you know, a serious salary.
Well, we... But, go ahead.
No, you can expound on
that. Well, we took the 10% pay cut prior to it, a year prior to the state. We are tied to the state, as I mentioned to you before, we're a chartered county.
So, before the state mandated it upon the state reps and
exactly.
senators.
We took it the year before. And then we were asking the unions to take it, and we felt that we should lead by example. So we took it. We also just recently, in the 2011-2012 budget, which we just concluded, we're also taking a 20% reduction to our health care. So
I understand the governor's just mandated that for all state employees, state and government
public employees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that includes the retirees that have pension plans that are paying. They have to pay 20% of their health care too, even though they're retired.
That's correct.
Well, things are changing. What most people don't know, and I'm sure you can verify, the national recession, which many people say we could have seen this coming a couple of years ago. Hindsight is always 20/20. But many of these problems have nothing to do with the poor elected officials that have to manage the affairs. They're inherited from not years back, but at least a decade back. And if we were brilliant in 2007 and could have foreseen what George Bush never told us in 2008, and no one ever told us, we might have been able to start preparing then instead of preparing in 2010 for the obvious. But listeners, that's the fact of life. Now we're going to have a PSA to break up our day so you can hear somebody else's voice instead of mine.
The Dearborn Farmers and Artisan Market is open Fridays from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. now through October 28th and is located next to the Bryant Library on Michigan Avenue in West Dearborn. For more information, call 313-673-4207. That's 313-673-4207. Or visit online at www.dearbornfarmersartisansmarket.com.
The WHFR Monday Forum, an hour of a wide variety of one or more talk show programs from 6 to 7 p.m., some of which are locally produced.
Today turns into yesterday, leaving only words we say for this time.
New ideas and information, different each week, not available on other Detroit stations. That's why we're the station making waves, WHFR.fm. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to whfr@hfcc.edu.
The good times, the hard times, this time is our time.
The WHFR Monday Forum, 6 to 7 p.m. And also listen to all locally produced talk shows on WHFR Tuesday Forum from 1 to 2 p.m.
Arthur C. Clarke once observed, two possibilities exist. Either we are alone in the universe, or we are not. Both are equally terrifying. Join your host, David Twitchell, the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m., when he and special guests examine the scientific evidence on We Are Not Alone. Right here on WHFR. .fm 89.3. That's the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. We are not alone.
back on the air live, and I guess one of the things we can talk about that's really important, Diane, is about the budget. If you'd like to kind of break it down in simple pieces for people to understand how much it is, did it get smaller, did it get bigger, and how's it divided up? People pay their taxes, and they think most of it goes to something it doesn't go to. Why don't you clarify that?
Okay. The county's budget is a $2 billion budget, but only about $500,000 to $600,000, and you know it's a moving target, it changes every year, is actually general fund operating dollars.
Is that discretionary, in other words?
Not necessarily discretionary, because there's many mandated services that have to be paid for out of that. Like
of
the
that.
Jail, for example, would be an example of a mandated service that have to come out of the general operating
fund. So where does
fund.
The rest go from the difference between $2 billion and roughly $500 million?
Well, the federal and state monies that we receive are for specific purposes that we administer.
So that's part of the difference between the billion and a half. I'm
right.
just making them into round numbers.
Right, right. I mean, you know, so mental health is huge, huge cost in mental health. I think we do about $700 million in contracts involving the developmentally disabled and mental health. That is a huge portion.
They closed all the state hospitals and put everybody on the street. So this is
Not something I support. I came into this after the fact. But
right.
there still are a lot of arrangements. People feel that it's more humane to do group homes versus institutions. And, you know, I agree with that. But it's a lot more costly. But it's, at the end of the day, better for the consumer. But then there are the programs that are, I think what we should probably focus on more are general fund expenditures. And so we have, you know, projected revenues from taxation and revenue sharing and permits and licenses and that type of thing. And then we have expenditures that fund given departments operationally day to day. And, you know, the different, and I want to differentiate because countywide electeds are, there's countywide offices and then there's departments, and there's a big difference. Countywide offices would be like your sheriff's department, your clerk's office, your treasurer's office, your register of deeds, in comparison to departments underneath the executive that report directly to the executive, which are like the mental health department.
They're appointed. They're not elected, though, right?
The countywides are elected, and the department heads are hired, appointed, right?
Okay.
And so some of the runaway trains, I mean, I think the biggest issues with Wayne County's budget is trying to reel in, number one, the courts. The courts overstep their budget every year. Their argument is that they're underfunded to begin with, and that's why
they're not making money for the county. The courts in Dearborn Heights make money for the city.
Yeah. no, they're extremely costly to us. And, you know, we run into, I think $60 million was the last figure that they were overrun their budget in the last year. Now, they fought it in court. There's ongoing litigation and appeals right now. And the courts actually won in that litigation, stating that they were underfunded. And
who decided that? Another judge?
Yeah, of course. They went to court with the courts. How do you think that's going to work out for you? So there's an appeal in process for that. And I'm just very hopeful that our chief judge, who really is a reasonable man, and I have a lot of respect for him, and our executive, Fukano, who also is a very reasonable man, just to get the two of them to work something out to where, you know, it can stop.
Now, you had a meeting today about the new jail.
We did.
What was wrong with the old one?
There's three. There's three old ones. One is very old. One was built in 1926. The other one was built.
Being an architect. I like the one in downtown Detroit. Was it getting too?
Region one was built in 1926. It's very old and antiquated. And the other one was built.
Where's that?
There, you know where the Frank Hall the Frank Murphy Hall of Justices,
yeah, sure,
and the Sheriff's Department on St. Antoine.
Yeah.
They're right down there. One and two are down there. Division three is the one that's in Hamtramck. That's the newer one.
Oh.
And that one's still nice, and it's the one that's mostly for...
So the one I think is nice is not nice. It looks nice on the outside.
No, they're awful. I went for a tour through them, actually, to see how awful they are, and they're really bad. But the biggest issue with the jail's situation as it is right now, and as you know, that is a mandated function, is that it's so costly to operate three separate buildings. You've got all that duplication and redundancy.
So with a new jail is one and you close the other, is that what's coming?
Exactly. Well, we're going to they're looking to demolish one and two. They're going away. They're
okay.
The old ones. Division three, the Hamtramck building, we're looking into other
so deals. So where's the new one going? People don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. You know where the, if you've ever served jury duty at the Frank Murphy Hall of Justice?
Sure.
Yeah.
Across the street, there's a parking lot.
2 months ago. Yeah.
And that 7-acre parking lot, the mud lot, they call it, is where they're building the new facility.
Oh.
Well, that's great. That's what we need, another empty lot filled up in Detroit, that's for sure.
Well, the thing is that it offers a ton of efficiencies in the reduction.
For the courts, you got to be able to go back and forth, underground passages and all sorts of things.
You got it. We got tunnel access.
See, you should have called me. I'd have done it better than Gafari.
That's right. You're an architect. Yeah. Well, we just had a meeting.
What are they doing with the property in Northfield, the old State House hospital?
I don't know.
I just drove by it the other day. It's just sitting there.
Yeah, that is a state.
That's a state facility.
Yeah,
it's in the county. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I don't know what their intentions are with that building.
Okay, I'm sorry. I lost your train of thought about budget. Jay, you have a question?
Yeah, I was just going to follow up. And thank you, Ned. This is Jay Koronek, Station Advisor, and I can always jump in here because of my position. But
make it easy for me.
In terms of the courts and the cost, is that because... the number of court cases increasing? Is it because crime is increasing too? More people are suing one another. Of course, it doesn't have to be crime. It's civil courts and criminal courts too. But
all of the above.
Oh, my goodness.
Absolutely. Certainly in this recession, you're seeing more and more of that. And that's true.
I have to say that...
Are there any fines? Don't they get fines?
Yeah, but I was just going to say that from my experience, too, I mean, people are not aware of how jury selection process, how long that takes, and how careful the courts actually work. I mean, that's very good. If you're accused of something and you're innocent, or even if you're guilty, you want your fair day, your full hearing in court. And it does take days and days on a case that's a little more complicated, where there's a testimony that has to be given in a court, jury selection. We went 3 days before we even got through the first batch of people that were gotten there. And then we thought I was selected for whatever reasons. And then an hour into the case, a mistrial. Was declared because of some procedural problem. Actually, it was the defense lawyer
that
was talking inappropriately in the hallway to one of the witnesses or something. But it's all in terms of fairness. I mean, they're very, at least the judge that I, whose court I was in, was they wanted to be extremely fair and follow all the rules. And
you're
if I'm accused of something, I want that process to be that careful. But it takes time.
And money.
It takes time, and then it takes money of all these people that operate those facilities. So I can well understand, and I think it's a very... good experience to go to jury selection. Just go and see how our courts work. I was at the Frank Murphy building, of course, and it's costly, but it seems extremely professional and extremely fair for all concerned. I mean, you know, it's not like TV courts at all. You gotta, you know, especially some of the showboat judges who were not really, well, they were judges once, but now they have the funny, you know, I'm the big time judge shows on the afternoon syndication. So it's a very important function, and I can understand why the costs are there. And I'm glad to hear about the new jail. I wasn't sure where that was going either, but that's now finalized from what you said, or it's pretty close?
It's pretty close.
You need funding yet, or you think you have it?
Well, this is where we're at with that. We have already approved the county executive to go forward with the bonding. It's a $300 million project. The efficiencies that will be gained by it will pay it pay itself off, basically, in the savings to the general fund every year. So where it stands right now, today we talked about the general contractor, which is Walbridge, actually that's been proposed through the bid process.
And all the consultants are local people in Wayne County.
Absolutely. We got Kafari right from Dearborn working as the architects. Their subcontractors are also Detroit, Wayne County based. One of the biggest
by
drivers.
By subcontractors, you mean they're consulting engineers that are different.
Correct.
And electrical, mechanical, structural, so on.
Exactly. And they did a great presentation for us today. A company named AECOM, which is also local, is project managing. And we had Walbridge with us today. They did the proposal, and Gafari. We did the proposal today before the committee as a whole, all 15 commissioners.
And if you're looking for a major contractor in this case, is Walbridge Wayne County based company? I'm thinking.
Yeah. Well, Walbridge is got a presence here locally, yes, but yeah. They're obviously they do work globally.
All over, yeah.
They're huge.
So but their subcontractors you might insist be more local.
Right. We in committee as a whole today, we made the recommendation for Walbridge to get the contract as general contractor, and it's moved to full board, which takes place tomorrow, and then it'll be official. And I don't see any problem with Walbridge getting the contract.
Well, when you get a thing that big, it's going to be hard to limit it, and then you're going to get into the minority contractor issues and all those complicated things.
We have specifics in the contract that talk about all of that, and one of the biggest drivers on behalf of the Wayne County Commission is that as many jobs are created here. That's the biggest need in Wayne County is employment.
Sure. We're going to take another identification break so people know who we're talking to and what we're talking about, and when we come back, you might tell us something about your committee assignments and what they do. That's an important thing. And let me go into my... You are listening to the Heights News and Views, part of the Tuesday talk show format, presented on the fifth Tuesday in any month. We are making waves here at WHFR 89.3 FM, the radio station of the Henry Ford Community College. I am your host, Ned Apigian, and our guest today is none other than the 9th District Wayne County Commissioner, Diane Webb. And she serves all of Dearborn Heights, Redford, and Garden City. And now to our guest, Diane, who will tell us more about her committee assignments. Well, start off alphabetically, whichever one you'd like to.
Okay, well, if we start off alphabetically, uh-huh. We'll start with audit.
Is that good?
Yes,
that's money.
That's the Truth Committee.
The Truth Committee, that's a good one.
We work with the Auditor General. The Auditor General is a chartered position of the Wayne County Commission. Him and his team of CPAs do audits every couple of years.
They're a consulting firm? They're not elected?
No, they're hired.
Hired by the county.
They're part of commission staff,
if
you will.
Okay.
So they do attestations and audits of the different departments. Every 2 years, they have to audit every department. And basically, you know, the Appropriations Committee, which in Wayne County Commission is the Ways and Means Committee, they say where the money is going to go, okay? The Audit Committee makes sure it went there.
Okay.
So I really enjoy being part of the Audit Committee. I've served on it in my last term, and so I'm in my second term into the Audit Committee working with the Auditor General. They make recommendations to reduce vulnerabilities and risks, both financial and legal.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about bringing better accounting practices. They are basically nationally known and recognized. They have peer audits that they always do an outstanding job. So we have audits to check our auditor, and they always come through it with flying colors. So we have a very impressive Auditor General's office. And then the other committees that I serve on recently, I chair, was given the chairmanship of the Public Safety, Judiciary, and Homeland Security Committee, which was something I'm very passionate about. I think that public safety is got to be a number one concern of government to provide public safety. I don't think either side of the aisle would argue with the importance of public safety. under public safety follows the prosecutor, the sheriff, the Third Circuit courts, and the clerk's office. Many of the clerk's functions evolve around public safety, not exclusively, but several of them. They're the record keepers of the courts. So I control the agenda, if you will, for the public safety, the members of the public safety committee, and we deliberate on all contracts that go through those four countywide offices. So that's the public safety committee. And then I also serve on the government operations committee. And this is a committee that I requested from the beginning.
What do they do?
Government operations looks at two things, mostly internally. Internal operating costs. And from my background in the phone company, I already went through what the government's going through today. For me, this is deja vu. I went from working in a company that was a monopoly in the telecommunications industry. We didn't have competition. We were fat and happy. And over the 18 years that I worked there, we had legislation that opened up the telecommunications market. We became highly competitive, and we had to learn to do more with less. Same thing that the county and government today, if you will, as revenues shrink and costs go up, we are finding ourselves in that same position where we have to do more with less. And so my training in my managerial years in the phone company really have helped me a great deal on the government operations committee, as we look at contracts that deal with our internal costs. The Department of Technology, for example, all the technology contracts come through the Government Operations Committee. Mm-hmm. Also, legal contracts are a big part of government operations.
Does there have to be a vote to decide who goes on what committee, or just
they're appointed by the chairman?
The chairman decides. Okay.
Right, and then I chair a task force on technology, because that's my background that I bring to the Government Operations Committee, and I also vice chair a committee, task force on ethics, because we're writing ethics ordinances and legislation for the county. So I have a pretty full plate. With public safety also comes the chair of the Community Corrections Board, and I vice chair the Commissary Board.
Okay. I mean, it's a very awful lot of responsibilities there. So that's really a five-day job? I mean, every day you either have a committee, or how does that work?
Well, with the committee meetings, they
if you want to make it one, you certainly can.
Oh, of course. Yeah,
yeah, you know, I think I've successfully grown it into about a 70 to 80 hour work week, but you know, there is so much work involved with the committees, and you know, we all have different levels of involvement on different committees, but as I laid out what my responsibilities are, I really want to do my homework and make educated decisions. So
okay, we only have about 10 minutes left in the show, about 8 mm-hmm. minutes to talk, mm-hmm. but I'll take this one away from Ned, because I do the journal show, and because mm-hmm. I say that's local news and alternative views, mm-hmm. We try to cover some, like you might say, big proposals or crazy ideas mm-hmm. that might not happen, but maybe it's a direction to go. Mm-hmm. A lot of urban planners, and Ned knows a few of them, historically have said that extremely densely populated urban areas such as Detroit really deserve a city government that expands pretty far out, including most of the suburbs even, so that the ideas can be better coordinated. And recently, Jack Lessenberry in the Metro Times has stated that he thought that such a proposal would be extremely helpful to Detroit. And apparently the legislature, if they pass... just they pass a law without vote of the people necessarily, can just expand Detroit City's limits to go out beyond what they currently are. And he thought the first place to start would be to expand them to the size of Wayne County. Of course, and I'd like to know if you think anything about that, whether or not that's a good idea. Apparently, and this is the support for it, urban areas that are very successful throughout the country in terms of coordination and jobs and business investments, such as Austin, Texas, and others, have done that. They just expand their city limits further and further out so that they can make well-coordinated ideas and also get some of the tax base from the suburbs mm-hmm. to flow back into their budget. So I don't know if you have an opinion on that, but my question would be, if maybe Lessenberry hasn't even thought of this yet, if they just expand the limits and make the city of Detroit the same size as Wayne County, you still have different purposes. Why wouldn't, and here's a interesting question, why wouldn't Wayne County just want to take over running the city of Detroit. Okay, I know. That's pretty far out, but it's the end of the show. Either we go crazy or you can just say, I'd rather not comment.
I never heard of that either.
That was really not where I thought you were going to go with that. Right now, financially, I don't think it would be wise to make any kind of changes like that. I mean, with a cumulative deficit in the county of about $266 million, including the city of Detroit and all 43 communities, and the city of Detroit having a budget deficit of about $350 million on their own, I don't know that we would want to marry right now. I do think that there's a lot of benefit to consolidating some functions. We're even looking to do that on the jail. We're looking to take over the Detroit lockup on the jail. So where there can be cost savings and cost sharing, I think it's a good idea to work with City of Detroit and Out County. I don't think Out County really wants to see their cities going to the City of Detroit. I think that would be highly objected to by the people we represent, and of course we're going to vote in the way the people are that we represent think so.
It would all have to come to a vote of the people. It would be very complicated.
It would never happen.
I don't know what Jack Lesenberry is smoking.
I think obviously the representatives in Lansing would not vote for that, but apparently they can do it without a local vote if they wanted to. But it would be, you know, one of the, just like even changing the tax code or something in Michigan, such a big deal that even if you could do it without a constitutional change, you wouldn't want, you know, your future election is in doubt or re-election is in doubt to go that far. But as you pointed out, there are some consolidations that seem appropriate. I just think that some people wonder, you know, well, why do we need counties or why do we need the city governments if the county is doing all these things and they've got all these people and all these committees and so on and commissioners elected, and it seems like they would overlap unnecessarily.
You have regional government. You have to go into Canada, go into Toronto and see the sensible things that people do even in Europe. I mean, we have a fetish in this country about individuality of individuals and individual cities and individual everything.
A lot of territorialism, yeah.
It's maddening. I'd like to conclude the program with a couple simple questions. The number of employees and number of retirees, how many do we have in Wayne County? I think people would be interested to know that.
Currently, we have 3,440 full-time employees. Regular full-time employees is 3,440.
I didn't know.
We have a total of 3,800 that includes temporary. Retirees, we're looking at 5,633 that are receiving pay and, you know, pensions and benefits.
Okay, so that's, we're talking roughly 9,000 people.
That's correct.
My next question is, I don't know if people thought there were more than that and less than that. I just think it's an interesting number. Like in the city of Dearborn Heights, if somebody asked me, we have about 250 employees and about that many retirees. I don't know the exact number. It changes. A lot of people think, oh, my God, there's how many hundreds of people are living off the taxes we're paying? You know,
let me just, because we are getting ready to conclude here. So Wayne County operation does have a budget crisis like everybody else.
Absolutely.
I mean, you have a funding crisis and cuts are always being considered, consolidations and so on. Is that right?
Absolutely. Best practices are always consolidation. I mean, our numbers have gone down considerably. At one time, there was over 10,000 employees in Wayne County. So the numbers are way lower than they used to be. We're looking for every opportunity to cost share, collaborate. The regional government, SEMCOG, Southeastern Michigan Council of Governments, we do a lot of work. Seven counties make that up, that operation.
Yeah, but that's not really regional government. It's a regional talk.
Well, they don't
get
into the day-to-day.
They contemplate their navels, but they're not. They don't have the power to.
Well, regional transits, that type of thing.
So the other thing is that I learned is this tax distribution of delinquent taxes. I did not know that the county really collects our taxes, and the people that don't pay, for one reason, whether they're banks, the county makes the communities whole. And there's penalties, and we actually, even if they have to wait to collect it, the county makes the cities whole, which is a very... Could you say something about that? Because I was shocked when I learned it.
Well, I'll throw out a quick number because I know we're running out of time. But like last year, we had $500 million in delinquent taxes in Wayne County.
Whoa.
Yeah, there's a number for you, right? So rather than have all the local governments suffer from that, we make you whole, and then we have to take on the burden of tax collection.
So I thought that's a little interesting fact our listeners would like. Jay, you said you had a question that's burning in your...
No, they're already burning. they've already burned. No, it's...
I would want to finally, Chris, say that
people who want more information at Wayne County, there's so many services that could help them. They may not be aware of all of them. You run a health department and all kinds of other things that are going on there. They should go to WayneCounty.com, which is the basic website that they can link to different offices and get phone numbers
by all means.
Certainly, they are there, and they are they're providing a wide range of services, either and unique from the city of Detroit or other cities that are in Wayne County. They're not really overlapping.
And if you're in Dearborn Heights, Garden City, and in Redford, make sure you call Diane.
And I will also, just to add, I'm putting out a newsletter that they should get in a few weeks, and I will provide you a list of all the countywide offices and all the service numbers that you can keep for your convenience.
That sounds like a great time. A great bit of information to end our program. And Diane, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
And now to our closing.
Okay. Thank you very much, Diane.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Heights News and Views, a live talk show program part of the WHFR Tuesday Forum series of talk show programs from 1 to 2 p.m. The Heights News and Views is a program presented on the fifth Tuesday of any month. The program is devoted to interviews with prominent individuals on issues important to the residents of Dearborn Heights. You have been listening to WHFR 89.3 FM Dearborn, making waves from the campus of Henry Ford Community College, located in Dearborn, Michigan. You can re-listen to this and all of our other archived forum programs on the internet by going to our website at whfr.fm and select the Tuesday date for the program that you wish to rehear by selecting the desired date. Thank you very much for listening to the Heights News and Views today.
WHFR, yeah, Dearborn.